Justice Ginsburg was a longtime advocate for LGBTQ equality. Leah Outcasting are concerned that her legal legacy on LGBTQ rights could be in jeopardy.
I think I've led an unusual life. I've traveled everywhere and I've met some wonderful people, and my life needed to be told.
I want young people to know that living a life of authenticity is the greatest gift you can give yourself.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. India's marriage inequality now faces triple threat. Queer youth toast RBG, and Monroe muses about his lay girl's legacy. Those stories and more this week, now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Lucia Chappell.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending October 10th, 2020. Three separate lawsuits are demanding marriage equality in India. The latest of the challenges were lodged this week. One petition was filed on behalf of a gay couple who were legally wed in Washington, D.C. in 2017. Their effort to register the U.S. marriage under the Foreign Marriage Act was rebuffed by officials at India's consulate in New York, strictly because they are gay. Registration would have been automatic if they were a heterosexual couple, and the lawsuit charges discrimination based on sexual orientation. A second suit was filed this week by a lesbian couple demanding the right to legally marry in India. They're the co-founders of a leading clinic in North India specializing in mental health and learning disabilities for children and young adults, and have been a couple for 8 years. Their petition notes that simple actions that married heterosexual couples take for granted are denied to them, things like opening a joint bank account and purchasing family health insurance coverage. A public interest litigation case challenging India's heterosexual-only marriage statutes is already underway. Such class action-like cases are brought on behalf of underrepresented groups to change public policy. Government lawyers told the Delhi High Court in mid-September that the Supreme Court's recent decriminalization of same-gender sex did not suggest the enactment of anti-discrimination protections or the right to marry. The court asked the plaintiff petitioners for a specific list of people aggrieved by being denied registration of their same-gender marriages. The matter was adjourned until October 21st.
The Inter-American Court of Human Rights joined queer advocacy groups this week to push Panama to enact marriage equality. The judicial arm of the Organization of American States had ordered all non-marriage equality countries in the region to open civil marriage to same-gender couples in January 2018. Panama is obligated by its membership in the 20-nation Organization of American States to comply, but a lawsuit to resolve the issue has been stalled for months in the country's Supreme Court of Justice. What specific actions could be taken against Panama if it continues to disregard the court's marriage equality order? It's unclear if either the Inter-American Commission or the court has any enforcement powers.
Is marriage equality safe in the United States? Some queer advocacy groups are expressing serious concerns this week after two Supreme Court justices called for a review of the June 2015 Obergefell decision. The call from Associate Justices Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas was prompted by the High Court's refusal to review the case of infamous and now former Rowan County, Kentucky clerk Kim Davis. Civil rights lawsuits can now continue against a professed devout Christian who denied queer couples marriage licenses after the High Court mandated it. Both justices voted with the High Court majority not to hear the Davis case, but they issued a rare statement accompanying the ruling. In it, they lamented that Davis may have been one of the first victims of this court's cavalier treatment of religion in its Obergefell decision by choosing to privilege a novel constitutional right over the religious liberty interests explicitly protected in the First Amendment, and by doing so undemocratically, the court has created a problem that only it can fix. Alito and Thomas joined Chief Justice John Roberts and the late Justice Antonin Scalia in the 5-4 minority against the marriage equality ruling. There are fears that far-right Christian conservative High Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett would make it an anti-equality majority. Barrett once clerked for Scalia and has claimed to be in lockstep with his literalist interpretation of the Constitution. President Donald Trump and the Republican-led Senate are trying to rush her confirmation before the presidential election in early November.
James Essex of the ACLU's LGBT and HIV Project called the Alito Thomas statement appalling. He said, "There is no license to discriminate or turn people away because they do not meet religious criteria. Our government could not function if everyone doing the government's business got to pick their own rules." Human Rights Campaign President Alfonso David warned that the addition of Amy Coney Barrett will only embolden these anti-equality extremist views on the court. "Our love is valid, our love is equal, and our rights must be." The Alito Thomas comments were also extremely concerning to the Alliance for Justice. That group accused the court's conservatives of clearly chomping at the bit to chip away at marriage equality. A statement issued by the queer advocacy group Lambda Legal charged that Republicans and the Supreme Court are gleefully coming for marriage equality, and they think Trump's Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett gives them the opportunity to do it. However, many equality activists were recently surprised by Trump-appointed Associate Justice Neil Gorsuch. He sided with and wrote the High Court majority opinion in the ruling that federal employment non-discrimination laws protect LGBTQ people. Other legal experts have expressed doubt that there would be enough supportive votes by the required number of justices for the court to revisit Obergefell, even with the addition of Amy Coney Barrett.
In other news, Petra de Sutter was sworn in as one of Belgium's 7 deputy prime ministers on October 4th, making her the highest-ranking transgender politician on the continent. A practicing gynecologist and former university professor of reproductive medicine, de Sutter is a former Green Party member of the European Parliament and served in Belgium's upper house of parliament from 2014 to 2019. De Sutter's appointment to the fragile ruling coalition solidifies Belgium's government after more than a year of uncertainty following inconclusive election results. New Liberal Prime Minister Alexander De Croo now leads a government with members from 7 different political parties, including other Liberals, Socialists, the Greens, and the Christian Democrats. De Sutter tweeted that she is incredibly grateful for the confidence I have received from my party to relaunch our country and work on a new future for all Belgians. I am proud that in Belgium and in most of Europe, your gender identity does not define you as a person and is a non-issue. Hashtag fight transphobia.
Meanwhile, out lesbian Ana Brnabic has won a second term as Prime Minister of Serbia. She became the Balkan nation's first female PM in 2017 and is the second ever woman on the planet to lead a government. LGBTQ rights activists are not exactly celebrating, however. Homophobia is common in Serbia, and LGBTQ people aren't protected by law from discrimination and are denied the right to marry. After she became prime minister, Brnabic made it clear at the 2017 Pride March that passing equality legislation took a back seat to what she considered to be more pressing concerns, such as inflation, pension, and improving the standard of living. She was not welcome at the 2018 celebration because of her failure to advance queer rights. Fuel was added to the fire when it emerged that Brnabic's lesbian partner used artificial insemination to conceive the couple's baby last year. That's an option not available to other LGBTQ people in the country. In fact, at the same time Brnabic was celebrating the blessed event, her government was considering specifically banning access to artificial insemination or other fertility services to anyone who has had a history of homosexual relations during the past 5 years.
Finally, anti-queer discrimination in the workplace can have serious consequences, something Britain's Jaguar Land Rover discovered this week when it had to pay a gender-fluid employee £180,000 in damages, about $232,000. An employment tribunal found in September that plaintiff Rose Taylor had been mercilessly harassed in the workplace and reconvened this week to determine monetary compensation. It had already determined that non-binary and gender-fluid people are protected from workplace bias by provisions of the UK's Equality Act of 2010 that cover sexual orientation and gender reassignment. Taylor was virtually hounded out of her job as an engineer by constant harassment from fellow employees when she started to wear feminine attire. She overheard workers referring to her as not normal and it. One asked her directly, "Are you going to have your bits chopped off?" Another derisively asking her if she was dressed for Halloween. After fighting Taylor's case at the tribunal, Jaguar Land Rover issued a statement apologizing to their former employee. The company promised to use the experience to improve its diversity and inclusion strategy. Taylor's barrister, Robin White, said her client was pleased with the outcome of the case and said, "Hopefully that will mean others may not suffer difficulties in the workplace as she did."
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending October 10th, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is recording remotely during the COVID-19 emergency. It's written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio channel on YouTube. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay healthy.
And I'm Lucia Chappelle. Stay safe. This Week in Trump.
I take responsibility always for everything because it's ultimately my job, too. I have to get everybody in line. I give up my $450,000 presidential salary. Usually I give it to drugs.
If you don't like who's in there, vote them out. That's what election day is all about. The biggest gun we've got is called the ballot box. So if you don't like who's in there, vote them out.
Perhaps you recognize me. It's your favorite president. I want everybody to be given the same treatment as your president because I feel great. I feel like perfect. You're going to get better. You're going to get better fast, just like I did. So good luck.
With the unsolicited millions of ballots that they're sending, it's a scam. It's a hoax. Everybody knows that. And the Democrats know it better than anybody else.
This guy's got some big issues.
If you don't like who's in there, we'll vote them out.
I like to obey the law.
We were breaking down a lot of barriers, and I think we made it a lot easier for gay people in those days.
The lasting legacy of Lay Girls later in the program.
You're the judge!
Equality advocates everywhere are reflecting on the loss of the world's most notorious judge, not least of all the young queers and allies who will carry her torch into the future.
This is Outcasting Overtime, from Media for the Public Good, producer of Public Radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Hi, I'm Chris, an Outcasting youth participant. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, an associate justice on the U.S. Supreme Court, died on September 18, 2020. She graduated from law school at a time when it was very difficult for women to even find a job practicing law. She nevertheless had a very successful career as a lawyer and was appointed in 1980 by President Jimmy Carter to the United States Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. 13 years later, in 1993, President Bill Clinton nominated her to the U.S. Supreme Court. After her Senate confirmation, by a 96-3 vote, she became only the second woman to serve on the court, after Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. Justice Ginsburg was a longtime advocate for LGBTQ equality. She joined the court majorities in all of the major cases involving LGBTQ rights during her time on the court, including Roe v. Evans, a 1996 case that struck down an anti-gay amendment to Colorado's state constitution that prevented Colorado cities from enacting local ordinances to protect gay people from discrimination in housing, employment, education, public accommodations, health and welfare services, and other areas. Lawrence v. Texas, in 2003, which overturned an earlier Supreme Court case that had allowed states to criminalize same-sex behavior between consenting adults acting in private. The two cases that overturned the Anti-Gay Defense of Marriage Act, Windsor in 2013 and Obergefell in 2015, giving equality to the marriage rights of same-sex couples. And most recently, the Bostock case in June 2020, holding that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act prohibited companies from discriminating against LGBTQ employees. After her death, the CEO of Lambda Legal, Kevin Jennings, said, "Throughout her entire legal career, including her 27 years in the Supreme Court, Justice Ginsburg fought for the rights of those in the margins. From her time as a lawyer, with the ACLU Women's Rights Project, to her years in the Supreme Court, Justice Ginsburg spoke with a clear and strong voice against inequality and gender discrimination. A longstanding ally of the LGBTQ community, her unwavering support, both on and off the bench, was a testament to her commitment to equality for all people." And the president of the Human Rights Campaign, Alfonso David, stated, "Today, we lost an unqualified, undisputed hero. She wasn't just an iconic jurist. Justice Ginsburg was a force for good, a force for bringing this country closer to delivering on its promise of equality for all. Her decades of work helped create many of the foundational arguments for gender equality in the United States, and her decisions from the bench demonstrated her commitment to full LGBTQ equality. She was, and will remain, an inspiration to young people everywhere." Justice Ginsburg changed the world for millions of people, including people of color and religious minorities, and it was a privilege to live in a time where she was serving on the Supreme Court. As LGBTQ youth and straight allies, we at Outcasting are concerned that her legal legacy on LGBTQ rights could be in jeopardy. In recent years, the Supreme Court, which already has a conservative majority, has shown great deference to religious freedom. You've probably heard about the cake shop owners and florists who cite their religious beliefs in refusing service to same-sex couples. An article in the Washington Post speaks of the concern that adding a sixth conservative to the court to replace the liberal Justice Ginsburg may further elevate religious freedoms at the expense of LGBTQ equality. On our current series on our main program, Outcasting, we're talking about the tension between equality for LGBTQ people and religious liberty when it's used to discriminate against us. You can listen to it on our website, outcastingmedia.org. But Ruth Bader Ginsburg's legacy to LGBTQ youth will live on. She was a woman who swam against the tide. She was a pioneer for equality and justice. Not only was she a young mother while attending Harvard Law School, but she was one of only 9 women in her class. It's inspiring to hear her story of success and how she fought through a system dominated by men. Her battles against this system show us that we too can counter the majority and make a difference. Hearing her story fills us with determination to keep fighting for what we believe in. Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, based in New York. This piece was created with input from the Outcasting team, including Justin, Lil, Timothy, and me, Chris. Our executive producer is Mark Sofis. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to Outcasting and related content. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
Hello, I'm Dennis Shepherd, Matthew Shepherd's father, and you are listening to This Way Out.
I am not here in spite of the struggle. I'm here because of the struggle.
Still to come, wise coming out words from a late-blooming hero, but first...
It seems strange calling you Stan. You don't mind me calling you Stan, do you?
No, I don't mind. Actually, I was wondering what to call you.
Gay Girls was a female impersonating show with beautiful dance numbers, lots of comedy, and fabulous over-the-top costumes. My shtick was doing stand-up comedy and introducing the different performers as they came on stage.
For the last couple of weeks, we've been commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Melbourne debut of Australia's pioneering drag show, Les Girls, with the show's MC, Stan Munro. In the conclusion of his three-part interview with This Way Out Sydney correspondent William Broom, Stan talks about his entrance and exit from Les Girls and about why he and William are writing his biography.
You were born in Wales. Just briefly, can you explain what brought you to Australia in 1963 to Sydney?
Well, I was working around Europe. I was part of a double dance acrobatic act. We worked for about, I would say 6 years around Europe and the continent. And then my partner, who was Australian, wanted to come home and get married and settle down. So I went along, and I owe a lot to Australia. I really do. Yes.
You spent 8 years with Les Girls in Melbourne. Why did you leave?
I left so that I could pursue a solo career. I couldn't see any future in being in a show. I wanted to do my own thing, you understand?
Shows such as RuPaul's Drag Race are really popular, and they're giving a larger audience, like Les Girls did, a view of the world of drag. What do you think of shows such as RuPaul's Drag Race?
It's far more advanced than Les Girls were. I mean, Les Girls, I would say, their makeup was more feminine, and because they were trying to pass themselves off as real women, where RuPaul's Drag Race, their makeup is completely over the top and out there. You know, it doesn't look like a real woman's makeup or aura. It's something different, yeah.
What advice do you have for the young drag queens of today?
Learn how to sing. Get a vocal coach and learn how to do comedy, so you can present a whole show by yourself. It's a completely different ball game now with shows. You won't get very far doing a solo stand-up lip-sync act. That just doesn't happen anymore.
What do you miss most about being in Les Girls in Melbourne?
I miss the fact that we were breaking down a lot of barriers. And I think we made it a lot easier for gay people in those days. It opened doors to other gay people in and around Melbourne. And a lot of shows started up in gay clubs. A lot of drag shows started up. We were at the coalface, though. We were there at the start.
Since leaving Les Girls, what have you been doing with your life?
I travelled solo. I've been overseas many times and travelled around Australia. I've been asked to compare other shows, which I've done. And for example, I was frontlining the first ever male strip show in Australia. And of course, I was with that show for 4 years, and we travelled the length and breadth of Australia, and it was very, very successful. And then I had my own show called The Stan Munro Show, where I had two male performers working alongside me. And that was an all live singing comedy show. And we traveled quite a bit in that show. Yes. I love working with live performers. I think it's great.
Now, you and I have been working on your life story, Queen of the Valleys. Why was it so important to write your autobiography?
Because I think I've led such an unusual life. I've traveled everywhere and I've met some wonderful people, and my life needed to be told. It's a brilliant cross-section of my life and the things I've got up to, the good and the bad.
Now, you're no longer living in the big cities of Sydney, Melbourne, or Brisbane. You're living in rural New South Wales. What is your life like now?
Well, at the moment, with the COVID, it's very quiet. Of course, you know, there's no work around for performers, albeit I don't have to work. But I lead a very nice life in the country, and we've got the dogs, a lovely two-story home near a rainforest. I love it here. I'm very happy at the moment.
Stan Munro from Lay Girls, thank you so much for joining us.
Can I say hello to my friends in Sydney?
Yeah, sure.
Hi.
Hi.
This is William Broome in Sydney, Australia for This Way Out.
Hi, this is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out. You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
California Governor Gavin Newsom nominated the first openly gay man to serve on the state Supreme Court on October 5th. Martin J. Jenkins would also be only the third black man on the court, and he brings with him a multi-layered personal history, a former football player who went into law and didn't come out of the closet until he was 66 years old. Jenkins shared these thoughts at the announcement of his nomination.
I want to say to some young person who may be out there today, who is struggling with their identity, anyone who knows me knows my identity has been, as a gay man, perhaps the greatest challenge of my life. And it has not been easy. But I want to say today to those young people who may be watching and those who may hear about what has transpired here, that I am not here in spite of the struggle. I'm here because of the struggle. It has deepened my character, afforded me sensibilities about the world and about people who are not so willing to accept that people can love differently than they do, but nevertheless love sincerely and genuinely and effectively. I want these young people to know that living a life of authenticity is the greatest gift you can give yourself. And if you do that, you too will find yourself in a position where people see you. They really see you and who you are, your authentic self.
That was Martin J. Jenkins, nominated to be a justice of the California State Supreme Court. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Michael LeBeau and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, from Outcaster Chris, produced by Mark Sophos, and from William Broome. 21 Pilots, Simple Plan, and Sachna Laparam performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, a bequest from the late Christopher David Trentum, and donors John Beaupre and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WODU Norfolk, Virginia, KGAY Palm Springs, California, 2XX Canberra ACT, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay safe, stay healthy, and stay tuned, y'all.